The saga of Diddy's downfall continues, and today's episode is an October bonus episode only for supporters, and we're going to go deep diving into this alleged dying memoir from Diddy's BM, Kim Porter. I'm going to walk you through this controversial book that has been taken down from Amazon. It's called Kim's Lost Words by Jamal T. Millwood, and I assure you, nothing is what it seems. We'll talk about the controversy, walk through the book, pull out the highlights of the author's claims, like Kim and Diddy having threesomes with dang near everybody. Then we're going to decode this two-hour interview from The Art of Dialogue with the author, Chris Todd. That's right, a.k.a. Jamal T. Millwood, Chris Todd. On this journey, we're going to talk about Tupac being alive, his stepfather's connections to all of this, conspiracies about Jay-Z, Big, Albie Shore, Will Smith, and I found another Jonathan Oddy connection, and there's so much more. Find out what all the hype is about today, and I'll tell you what I'm not believing. Now, if you're on that free feed loser status, you're going to miss out again. Oh, my God. Don't miss out again. You need to sign up for one of the three supporter feeds to unlock the full episode, because every month we do bonus episodes for the supporter feeds. That's right. The people that keep this show alive, they get a little extra hookup. And if you're new, you're like, what's a supporter feed, Isaac? I'll give you the 30-second version right now. I got three options. Links are in the show notes. That's all you got to remember, okay? Most popular option, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. Easiest option, if you're using the Apple Podcast app, is to sign up for Apple Premium. You mash the button, you're in. The cheapest option that requires you to copy and paste an RSS feed is IlluminatiWatcher.com VIP section. All three of these supporter feeds unlock the monthly bonus episodes. Hundreds so far, going all the way back. I started doing bonus episodes around 2017 when I signed up for Patreon. So you're going to unlock all the bonus episodes, including the current Twin Peaks Grey Lodge series. You'll get early access to every show I do. No more ads ever. All just for the price of a cup of coffee in the big time, yeah. All for the price of a cup of coffee, my God. Links in the show notes, check it out. Support actual independent media. There's no foreign entities paying me $500,000 a month to push their propaganda. I'm a one-man army, a true American patriot, telling you what I research, where I find it, and I tell you all my biases. I did a three-hour show, Who Was Isaac Weisop, just a few weeks ago. I need you to understand my biases. All right. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying this is my worldview and this is what I believe. I'm not trying to convince you to believe what I believe. I need you to know my biases and I need you to decide what you want to believe. All right. And that's what this is all about. And I only do this show because the supporters. Supporters keep it alive because I get censored and banned off of everything for whatever reason. The grifters are getting, Russell Brand's got 7 million followers on YouTube. I get banned twice. Just got banned again last week, so I don't know, whatever. Anyway, that's the deal. You want to support the show? You want to keep it alive? That's how you do it. And shout out to all my supporters. I appreciate you guys and girls and all that. You guys are the best. Now, that leads me to my second point. Why no video? Because some of you guys are on the tier two, available on the Patreon or the VIP section only. Sorry, Apple, I have no way of facilitating video links to you guys. Why no video? Well, because here's the deal. When I do book reviews, it depends. If I can get the Kindle version or an ebook, it's easier for me to copy and paste the stuff I need and sort of organize my notes so I can read it to you on the video version. All right. This one, I bought the book. I've got the paperback in my hand. There was no Kindle option. There was no ebook option. I bought the actual paperback and I'm going to have to read from it, which I've got notes in the margins. I've got to kind of like pause and kind of, okay, what am I talking about in this area? I got to kind of do it on the fly. So I don't want to sit here and have you sit there watching me going, wait a minute. So I just don't do the video for these kinds of shows. All right. So no video tier two. I'm very sorry. Let's start out with the drama. The drama of this book, Kim's Lost Words by Jamal T. Millwood, a.k.a. Chris. Chris. Oh, man. When was this published? Which I find to be the most crucial piece of evidence. In fact, that's the takeaway of this whole show. Dates. Dates are important. All right? And we'll explain why that matters as we get into this book. But when was this book published? Because you can't get it right now. It's unavailable. They've removed it from all the platforms. So that was the first question I had. It was like, I got to figure out when this book was published because that matters. I open up the back page of my book. It says September 21st. And I thought, oh, wow, okay. But then I thought, wait a minute, this is self-published on Amazon, and I've self-published 9 books on Amazon myself. So I go over to my catalog here, and I confirm that those are actually the dates that the book was printed, because they print, when you do self-publishing, they print on demand. When you go through a publisher, they print them all in a big batch. They send you 100 copies as an author to sell or do whatever you want to do with them. And they have to run, you know, different printings, whereas self-published through Amazon, they print it on demand. So anyway, so that doesn't really help me, because I ordered it on September 20th when I heard about this book. The first time I heard about the book, I ran to my little Amazon. I said, Jeff Bezos, take my money. Take my money. I want to see this BS, because I knew this book was going to be taken down. And, you know, I've been doing this since 2011, folks. All right. I've been doing this a long time. This ain't my first rodeo. I knew this was going to get taken down, so I bought it. Thank God it did. Now, the book was taken down October 1st, all right? So I Google, I'm like, man, how do I find when this book was published? On the Amazon listing, I'm going to Google search, it shows September 6th. I was like, well, I can't tell. I can't validate that. So I looked on bookscouter.com, was another result. They showed the book was published September 5th. So I'm like, okay, the 5th or the 6th sounds reasonable from what I can tell. And wouldn't you know it, I looked up, well, when was Diddy arrested? September 16th. So that actually is interesting. That actually lends some credence to the validity of the book. And I say some, I mean a little bit, all right? Because when I first read this book, I said, this is such bullcrap. This is BS, man. This stuff didn't happen. This is some guy, Jamal Millwood, a.k.a. Chris, just trying to cash in on a tragedy. He said, oh, look, Diddy got arrested. Let me say this book's from Kim Porter. Because you can self-publish anything you want. Except for me. I wrote a book about a certain health choice that you had to make a couple years ago. And Bezos wouldn't let me publish that one. Which was crazy, because I was coming at it from a very rational standpoint, because my viewpoint on it is, you know, you're rolling the dice either way. You take the health solution or you don't. Either way, you could get burned. And I was just trying to provide all the information, because I wrote an 80-page book, and I researched the heck out of that topic because I was worried about it. I said, man, because I usually don't do those things. And anyway. But yeah, Diddy wasn't arrested until the 16th. So I thought, well, that is kind of interesting, because if this was a grifting cash grab, you would have thought he published this September 18th or 19th. But Diddy got arrested on the 16th. But no, apparently September 5th. Good timing, sir. Good timing. So we're going to come back to that. Let's talk about the author, because I didn't know this up until 2 days ago. In fact, I did an episode of Breaking Social Norms with my wife, Josie, my normie wife, Josie, and we talked about this book before I sat down to do this show you're listening to now. And I thought the guy's name was Jamal T. Millwood this whole time, and I just found out, nope, it's a dude named Chris Todd, a white dude. And that's not even his real name. His real name is Todd Christopher Guzzi. I don't know. If you go to independent.com, it says, the independent publisher is Todd Christopher Guzzi, who goes by the name Chris Todd, and defines his occupation as an investigative producer, author, and journalist. Todd told the Associated Press in a phone interview in September that sources very close to Kim and Sean Combs provided him with a flash drive, documents, and tapes from Kim Porter that he eventually pieced together to create the memoir. Last week, Sean Diddy Combs issued a statement from prison calling the book a fake. His attorney, Erica Wolf, said in a statement, the Kim Porter memoir is fake. It's also offensive. A shameless attempt to profit from a tragedy. Which, I got to be honest, that's kind of my take on it. Right off the bat, reading it. My gut hot take is this is grifting. So I hear about the book. I order the book. I get it. I immediately look through it. I'm like, man, I don't believe this. And then all these celebrities, you know, Diddy, a couple others, are like, nah, that's fake news. And then October 1st, AP News reports it's already off the market. Amazon confirmed Tuesday the removal of a memoir from its site that purports to tell the story of an abusive relationship between the late actor and model Kim Porter and her longtime partner, hip-hop mogul Sean Diddy Combs. Porter and Combs' children denounced the book as a complete fabrication after it became a bestseller on Amazon in September. And in fact, later we're going to talk about, during the interview with the author, he tells you how much money the book made. I was like, bro, this is why people grift. You know, because 2 months from now, this book's going to be out of the news. No one's going to talk about it. And he's going to be loaded. He's set for life. Unless he gets sued, which is already kind of happening. It's just easier to tell the truth, folks. You know what I mean? Okay. Amazon spokesperson said, "We were made aware of a dispute regarding the title and have notified the publisher. The book is not currently available for sale in our store." All right. So that's where we're at. So I got a hot little commodity in my hands right now because you can't get it. And I'm going to tell you what's in it right now. So this next section is going to be me walking through the book. I'm not going to obviously tell you every gritty detail, but I'm going to pull out some of the hot, controversial stuff, tell you the stuff that I think is questionable, stuff that I think is not questionable, some terminology used in the book that raises questions as to whether or not this was really Kim Porter, and so on. And then after we're done with that, I watched this 2-hour-17 most painful video I think I've ever watched in my entire life on YouTube. This show called Art of Dialogue interviewed the author of this book. I don't think I've watched a more frustrating piece of media in my entire life. If there was a 10 thumb down button, I would have clicked it. In fact, I went to leave a snarky comment on it. And funny story, I went to leave a snarky comment and say, "Guys, this is truly the most painful thing I've ever seen." And when I clicked the button to start the comment writing, it refreshed the page and was like, "You've been banned." Because what had happened was, you see, yesterday I woke up to an email from YouTube saying they torched my YouTube channel. I was rebuilding the audience, you know, because I got torched in 2018. And I was rebuilding. I was up to close to 25,000 followers, you know, nowhere near with the heyday, back in the heyday 2018 where I was at. But I was building. I was like, all right, cool. Let's try this YouTube thing again. And they torched me. They said, "Oh, because you're talking about conspiracy stuff, whatever." And I was like, whatever, dude. And that was the day I started watching this painful interview. And I hadn't refreshed the page, so it didn't. It didn't know that it had kicked me off. And when I went to type a comment, I had to restart the video over. Anyway, yeah, cool story, bro, right? Okay, let's talk about what's in the book. I'm going to walk through and tell you what's up right now. Okay, so, and this is going to be heavily opinion-based, right? But right off the jump, the cover has an image of Kim Porter. I don't know where this was retrieved from. I would suspect if you could find a way, and you got to be more technologically savvy than me, if you could do a reverse image Google search, I guarantee this image is on one of those. It's on the internet somewhere. And maybe, though. Look, I'm telling you right off the bat, I don't believe this book. I don't believe it. I would put money down that this is all fake. And it's not because of the celebrities are saying it's fake. It's because when I read it, I'm like, this is, how can anyone believe this is Kim Porter? And not just Chris Todd. But I could be wrong. This is my biases coming through, okay? So don't take my word for it, by all means. But right off the bat, I'm highly suspect of this cover image. I feel like, man, this feels like something they found on the internet and just spliced it on here. All right. Okay. It starts out with the disclaimers. It says, and I'm not going to read the whole book, right? We're going to breeze through this in 20, 30 minutes. One of Kim Porter's final wishes was for this memoir diary to be made public out of protection for certain parties and their potential criminal activity. Some celebrities, performers, and events have been represented with X's due to their highly explosive nature, and at some point in the future, this information will be revealed to the public. Regarding Kim's sudden death and the mysterious illnesses of Albie Shore and Jamie Foxx, evidence does exist that points to foul play and or poisoning. All right. Because as you know, Kim Porter died in 2018. She was young and healthy. Supposedly, she died from pneumonia. Albie Shore was in a coma. Jamie Foxx was in a coma, allegedly. We don't know. There was some weird stuff, and those guys are very close to Diddy. And I already talked about this on previous episodes. The pneumonia thing is strange with Brittany Murphy and Ashton Kutcher. It seems like it's all from the same playbook, all right? Now, then you have a table of contents. There's 19 chapters in this thing. Chapter 1, the introduction. It's and this whole, the memoir slash diary, there's no dates in the book. Not one date in the entire book. It's all written in the past tense, which tells me this is a look back and not a diary. Because a diary you would write in every night. You know, like Laura's secret diary every night was today, you know, Sean Combs wouldn't stop saying, take that, or whatever, right? This is written like it's all from the past. I'm going to read you a little bit of chapter one, the introduction. It says, soon after high school, I started landing modeling jobs. I couldn't believe it. It was all happening so fast. I met my husband, father of my oldest child, and one of my oldest friends in life, Al B. Shore. It was a whirlwind romance. I was only 19 when we married, and no, it didn't work out. Al is still one of my best friends to this day. Our son Quincy is such a talented and wonderful young man. Now, here's where I will petition to you as to why I don't believe this book. Because when I read that, I think, okay, this is all stuff you could look up, and any idiot, I could have found this online. There's no personal insight that tells me, I don't know, some anecdotal thing of like, man, I met Al B. Shore, like, I met him, I remember it was a sunny day, and I was driving down the road in my Toyota Camry, and there was this guy, and he was really handsome, and he had these crazy sunglasses and a unibrow. You know, I don't know. It's stuff like that. There's not a whole lot of specifics in the book besides the controversial stuff. That's the stuff that, I don't know, whatever, right? Then it says, you know, it goes on to talk about Diddy, and it says, Sean Combs must be stopped. All right. Chapter 2. I was born to loving parents, Jake Porter and Sarah L. Porter, in the Peach State of Georgia. All through Columbus High School, where I graduated in 1988, I knew I was going to be famous. In the 10th grade, one of my best friends, Tina, said to me, you won't make it here in Georgia. All right, that could be a personal anecdotal there, I guess. Maybe I retract my statement. Okay, here we go. Then she talks about, she says, when I met Sean, he was cool. I didn't think much of him at the time. He was just another guy at the label. Uptown was huge, and we were all living our best life. But Sean continued to lay on the charm, and before I knew it, we were dating. Okay. He and Clive would hang out a lot, but I didn't think anything of it. I mean, that was his boss, and he was doing things bigger than most men dare to even dream. Then it happened. I mean, okay, I was a little bit of a freak. I really enjoyed myself with my partner, and toys are one thing, but I never imagined having a man I was dating asking me to use a toy on him. The first time, he said he just wanted to experiment, try something new. I was grossed out, but he kept begging. He said it would only be this one time, and he was just curious. I was only 20 at the time. I said, what the hell? I hated it. He bled from it, and there was shit on it. I left him alone after that. Okay, now, let's zoom out, folks. This book is 59 pages. Each chapter is maybe 2 pages or 3. And chapter 2, we jump from a little snippet of growing up in Georgia to dating Diddy to I'm putting dildos in his butt in 1.5 pages. I love women, okay? I think women are pretty, even if Diddy's a monster, I would think that a female, and this is me using stereotypes, I could be wrong, a female wouldn't necessarily talk like that. I would think that a female would be more like, look, Diddy was into some freaky stuff. To go into specifics about him bleeding and there's doo-doo on this toy, I don't know, it just seems like, and that's the way the chapter ends, it just seems like my gut check on it, I think, I don't know if this is a female. I think this is Chris. Chris, what are we doing? And the page formatting sucks, by the way. I've self-published my own books, so I know how to page format, and it's a pain in the butt. I mean, he's got a page number on the title page, which is completely not supposed to happen. The table of contents is like page two. It's supposed to be Roman numerals. I mean, come on, guy. What are we doing? But hey, you know, that's not the claim we're debunking. We're not saying that he is a good editor writer. We're talking about the claim that this is Kim Porter's words. All right, chapter three, page six. She's talking about hanging out with Diddy. And on page seven, she talks about, she says, things were going great and we were living the dream that I dreamt about throughout my youth. Sean and Clive were working on Bad Boy, and he had his first couple of artists. He picked up Craig Mack, spelled incorrectly, by the way, then some rapper from the West Coast called Notorious B1 to help Chris develop. He was collaborating with the biggest names in hip-hop. Now, this one's interesting because Notorious B1 is a interesting subject because that is supposedly the real identity that Notorious B.I.G. stole to create his like alter ego, right? Man, I gotta find my notes on this. Okay, sorry. See, this is why I don't do the video. So Notorious B1. Well, first off, Craig Mack is interesting. He had that song Flavor in Your Ear, which introduced Notorious B.I.G. to the world because he was featured on it, right? Craig Mack died in 2018 from AIDS. But apparently people wanted people to believe it was heart failure. All right. Why did he have AIDS? Was he part of these freak-off parties? I don't know. Interesting side conspiracy quest. So Notorious B1 is allegedly, and I say that because his name only showed up recently to me, and I question if this whole story is even real, but apparently Notorious B1 was a rapper that Big stole his whole persona, his name, everything. And there's a clip of Notorious B.I.G. out there on YouTube telling people how he got sued and how people can't call him Biggie Smalls anymore, and it's allegedly in reference to Notorious B1. And I try to run this to ground. You know, it's hard to tell what's real anymore. But it seems like Notorious B1 was a real person from this group called the Mississippi Doughboys, because I found some cassettes from 1993. If you go to discogs.com, you can find it. I got the link here. And there was a track Notorious B1 had called Big Daddy, and it sounds exactly like Juicy, the, you know, the Big song. And let's see, what do my notes here show? Okay, so this is part of the claim. He went from Biggie Smalls to Big Space E Space Smalls due to a lawsuit by Calvin Lockhart in 1992. Then he became Notorious Big in 1993, the year Notorious B1 from Mississippi dropped his first and last single. Big needed a name and a hit single, and Puffy found both in Mississippi. Notice on the song in question, Biggie says, from the Mississippi down to the East Coast. And also notice B1 named his song Big Daddy, and Biggie named his alter ego Big Papa. So there's a lot, and this is kind of in the ballpark of those Lady Gaga, Lena Morgana things, which is super fascinating. It's almost like these people steal these other people's characters and then kill them or something. And I was able to find, and again, it's tricky. I try to find copies of these cassette tapes on eBay. There's nothing. I did find a YouTube video posted in 2016 of this Notorious B1. But again, this is much later than 93. So I haven't run this thing to ground yet entirely. But I mean, it's another conspiracy side quest you could take. It's pretty wild, you know. Anyhow, let's get back to the book. But yeah, so this is a reference to a conspiracy that kind of, it got wings not too long ago, right? That's the only reason I knew about it. Some people had tagged me. I think Skinny Fresh sent me the video a while ago, just a few months ago. All right. So allegedly, so again, they're like, there's a lot of conspiratorial angles in this book that I think this sounds like, to play devil's advocate, if I was the author trying to grift on this and I was into conspiracies, I would like discuss all of them in this book. I'm shocked there wasn't a whole lot of like satanic ritual stuff in here. So maybe, you know, I'm leaving room. I'm leaving the door open that maybe this is real, but I'm telling you right now, my gut tells me it's not. All right, let me keep reading. Then he asked me to do it again. It was insane. Sean said, "Baby, I can't stop thinking about it." "What the hell are you talking about?" I responded. Sean continued, "I just can't stop thinking about that night. It was amazing. Can you screw me one more time, please?" I became infuriated. "Why don't you go to Clive? He's the one screwing you, isn't he?" Then Sean hit me. This was the first time, but he slapped me hard. Before I could form words, he began to beg, I'm sorry. Holding my cheek where he hit me, I turned and ran off. That should have been it, but I'm a glutton for punishment. That's page 7. So twice we're already talking about the dildo thing. All right, chapter 4, page 9. Sean kind of makes up. And she talks about the bodyguard, Gene. Despite my reservations, Gene was a sweetheart. And that's the actual bodyguard name. And again, this was public information before, so devil's advocate, if I'm just making this stuff up, I would, you know, put some proper names in there. Chapter 5, page 11, Sean Neals is what it's called. The year passed, and thankfully, we didn't have many bad arguments, although Sean was strangely getting into voodoo. There's that little tinge of satanic stuff, because we talked about this on the 3-hour deep dive. Diddy's got a giant tattoo on his back of a voodoo black Madonna. And I saw a video, gosh darn it, I should have fact checked this. The character, the voodoo name is Dandor, and supposedly there's a Dandor Day, and it was the same day that Diddy got arrested, September 16th. All right. But anyways, the actual date of September 16th being Elizy Dantor Day. I can't confirm that. Again, a lot of the stuff, it's not immediately available upon searches. You got to go deep on some of this. So I thought that was interesting. Anyway, okay. His label was blowing up. Biggie dropped and it was just about over. He also signed Mary J. Blige. And of course, when I found out he slept with her, we fought. He claimed it was a mistake and my stupid ass took him back again. Sean asked me for a threesome with her. At first, I was mad, but Mary was beautiful. It was our first threesome, and I loved it. Mary was sexy. I would not be doing this a lot, but it was so hot. I was young, and exploring my sexuality was enticing. Okay? So there's one wild claim. She says threesome with Mary J. Blige, which I think Mary J. Blige is threatening to sue because of that. Then she talks about Al B. Shore coming over, and this is where the author got in trouble with Al B. Shore, too. So Al B. Shore comes over, they're hanging out, and they're talking about doing butt stuff, I guess, and doing sexy time. So I asked, "Are you both sure?" I imagined both of them inside of me. I knew this would be awkward sexually. There would be some bumping of genitals. But what happened next, I couldn't have imagined in my wildest dreams. Al, and then it's all X'd out. I couldn't believe it. I stood there in shock. But when Sean X'd out, I ran out of the room. This was too much. I couldn't. Sean called out to me, "Oh, come on, Kimmy." They didn't chase after me. They X'd out. I couldn't get the image out of my mind. I couldn't be with Sean for a while, but that wouldn't be the last time I saw Sean in a compromising position. Not by a long shot. One day I found the vault where he kept all of his encounters with men. Yes, he kept a record of it. But that's for later. Okay. Now we're on page 14, all right? So notice that you're smart people. You can deduce what you want to believe there. But yeah, Al B. Shore apparently is suing this guy too. And it's like, why? What was X'd out here exactly? Or is it just, I don't know. Okay, moving on. Chapter 6, POC, page 14. Sean wheeled and dealed in a way that would have been unthinkable to many. He slept with the guys that really controlled the music to stay on top. A lot of the names average people never heard of. These are the guys that make the decision on who is winning and who is not. He hosted parties that were just a fancy name for orgies, and everyone wanted in. When I met Tupac, Sean and I had an open relationship, and yes, I slept with Pac. Shit, he was sexy. Sean didn't mind. Well, not until he tried to get Pac to join both of us. Pac was not good with that. This is where the relationship between them became strained. Tupac wasn't going to accept Sean's advances. Pac wasn't gay, and he was pissed about the advances. I want to talk about this because when the Art of Dialogue interviews the author, he points out some dates that make it so this wasn't possible or likely. We'll talk about it. Months passed with only the tension between them. It was uncomfortable, but nothing life or death. Then one day while we were in the studio, it happened. I walked into Sean's office and he was having the conversation. Sean sat across from Jimmy Henchman. Pac, don't leave that effing studio alive. I don't think I was supposed to hear it. I continued as if I didn't. Hey, Sean, good morning, Jimmy. They didn't seem to think I heard anything. I'm ordering breakfast. Smiling, Sean replied at first, let me get eggs sunny side up with grits and an orange juice. I could see he was hungover. Good. Anyways, there she's implying that this was the first time Tupac got shot at Quad City Studios. And then later she confirmed, the next page she confirms it. It was orchestrated and Sean Puffy Combs was the orchestrator. Okay. Chapter 7, Threats. Here we go. Page 18. Sean has a bad temper. He yells sometimes and okay, he's roughed me up once or twice, but he never punched me. He never bruised me. Didn't the author literally say four pages ago that he hit her? Okay. And he never hit Quincy. I would not have stood for that. Quincy's their son. Or Quincy is Albie Shore and Kim Porter's son that Diddy ended up adopting. Okay. He never laid a hand on my son. At that time, I never thought of him touching Quincy in any way. Then the significance of what he said hit me. Is he mad at Tupac over me? I'm the big dick. Oh, my God. The last time he put his hands on me, it was because I enjoyed Jamie Foxx too much. Shit, he enjoyed Jamie, too. Okay, so keep track. Threesome also happened with Jamie Foxx. And Jamie Foxx was really close with Diddy. He was the cameraman at the parties. Remember, we did a whole show about Jamie Foxx? I mean, there's a lot of smoke here and a lot of fire. But is this particular book true about it all is the question. He talks about how she then talks about how okay she talks about Sean talk about Diddy and Jay-Z having sex. A third guest was escorted over by security. Sean motioned for him to sit. A waiter walked over to Sean Carter, said, would you like something? Carter, that's Jay-Z, responded, no thank you, then said hello to me with a smile. Smiling, I replied, hey Carter. I took a sip of my drink. The Shawns may share a bed together from time to time, but thankfully I was never asked to join. Carter went on to speak to Sean. I thought we were meeting in private. Sean replied with a nonchalant shrug. I had to discuss something with her. It's fine. Go ahead. Carter shifted uncomfortably in his chair before continuing. It's true. Chris and Pac were about to start their own label. And that made Diddy mad. And that's the implication of why Big and Tupac got murdered is allegedly, Big and Pac were going to start their own record label. And we're going to talk about that in the Art of Dialogue interview as well. Okay? And a bit of a fact check on why that probably wasn't true either. Let's see. Okay, I respect that, Carter kept going. On top of that, this N-word is making that move, and it should have been with me. Sean looked at Carter blankly. Pac put Chris on. You know this. What's this really all about, Carter? Don't effing try to play me. The Jay-Z of today wasn't born yet. This young Sean Carter was in over his head. Cornered, he had to spill it out. I want his spot. Ambition. Now this is a man I can work with. So basically he's saying that Jay-Z wanted Big taken out as well. Because it's true, Diddy and Jay-Z, best friends. And boy, am I ready for the Jay-Z Beyonce takedown. That will be quite the day. I don't think they're going to let it get that far, to be honest. That's too much. They're going to make sure this gets shut down before that. But Boy, won't that be something. Chapter 8, Kidada. Oh, they talk about Kidada Jones, which was Tupac was dating her. It was his fiance when he died. And we talked about this on the Twin Peaks show. Quincy Jones and Peggy Lipton from Twin Peaks, Norma. Rest in peace, Norma. Their daughter is Kidada Jones. Isn't that something? So, yes, less than 6 degrees of separation to our beautiful world of Twin Peaks. Yes, Kidada knew about Kimora. Talk about Kimora Simmons. Was that Russell Simmons' daughter? Russell, again, refer to my Diddy 3-hour deep dive. Also, lots of allegations about him. Sean and I all being... Okay, yes, Kidada knew about Kimora. Sean and I all being together sexually. Chalk it up. Another threesome. Of course she did. We shared that kind of thing. We were open and honest. Blase, blase, blah. Okay. Then page 24, but this was Quincy Jones's daughter. Sean was a monster in the streets, well feared by men that knew, but he did not want any of the smoke Quincy Jones could bring. Now here's where, again, this is my personal bias. Kim Porter died 2018, so even if she wrote that passage the day before she died, that wasn't really a... Talking about... Smoke wasn't really a huge term in 2018. Like, maybe she used it. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm just a white dude that listens to hip-hop, and I've only heard that term just in the last few years. I looked it up to try to sort of debunk this or whatever, and it looks like there's a track from 2016 with Gucci Mane, and he uses the phrase about wanting all the smoke. But... I don't know. Just questions I've got. Chapter 9, page 26. I was beginning to think I was there more to cover his wild desires than because he really wanted to be with me. He was like Caesar, every woman's man and every man's woman. But truthfully, at that stage, I was becoming okay with it. I woke up and left the bedroom where I was with Jada Pinkett, and Sean happened to be coming out of the bedroom with XXX, we don't know who, and Will Smith. Yes, X, X'd out, some name we don't know. Yes, X attended the parties from time to time. Just to be crystal clear, remember at the beginning he said he X's out the names. So I'm not talking about DMX. I'm not talking about XXXTentacion. When I say X, it's X'd out in the book. Yes, X attended the parties from time to time. I could see him and Will kind of snuggled up on the bed together. I was grateful I wasn't asked to join in that room. I didn't really like X. Sean smiled when he saw me. Good morning. Here at the orgies, he wasn't very affectionate. He didn't have to pretend, but he couldn't walk straight. Women don't talk like this. Come on. I knew how his ass felt, literally. We've had sessions playing with each other's anal cavities. I mean, I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I'm not. Women don't, not in a, I mean, maybe in like women, female locker room talk, but no way would she be like, hey, you know what? I want my last words the last thing my kids will ever hear me talk about. I'm going to say these things in this way. No way. No way. You can't make me believe it. If Jamal Chris Todd wants me to believe that he wrote that this actually came from Kim Porter, you got to prove that, man. It's stuff like that that I read, and I'm just like, man, my gut tells me this is so fraudulent. And that's disgusting if it is, right? The poor kid's mother's dead, and now they got to read this thing about we've had sessions playing with each other's anal cavities. Like, she doesn't need to share all that. All right, keep going. Page 27. But before we started talking, X came out of the room. Oh, by the way, chalk it up, another threesome. It's Will Smith and a mystery man, but we've also got Jada Pinkett with Kim Porter, allegedly. But before we started talking, X came out of the room. Sean was wearing boxers. X was in his birthday suit. X addressed us, morning. When he turned around in order to close the door, there was a dried cum stain on his back. You think Kim Porter put that in here? You think Kim Porter wrote that? A mother, a mature what was she, like in her 40s? Who was writing her last words that she wanted the whole world to read. She gonna, first off, like, would you even notice that? Would you even see that? Did that even happen? I mean, it's ludicrous. Here's one piece of evidence that supports that maybe this is real, because this sounds exactly like the way Diddy talks. Business first thing in the morning? Damn, cuz, you on it. But you know you don't get nothing to worry about. You got a pass, daddy. Oh, man. I mean, this is some of my favorite TikTok videos, are the ones of Diddy calling people other men daddy. I love it. So funny. But an older, wiser me understands now what I did not comprehend all those years ago. Sean was just getting to the real reason that he had X there. The world was about to lose Biggie. X laughed. You a cold mother effer, Sean. Why the F should I protect someone that isn't going to stick around? I made him. That N-word should be worshiping the ground I effing walk on. Okay. Chapter 10, we're on page 30. When the phone rang, I picked it up. Hi, Sean. He sounded trepidatious as he said, we've been broken up for a while this time. Yeah, he continued. I don't want anyone to know about my... He paused to search for the right word. Proclivities, I replied. So you don't want people to know about you being gay? All right. Chapter 11, we're cruising. We're on page 34. Sean was very direct with his next inquiry. Is someone else waiting for you? No, but Sean, we're not together. You're dating someone else. I can F whoever I choose. With this, Sean became irate. He fiercely slammed me to the ground. Then he pulled out a .22 and sat it on the end table. Okay. A couple questions here. And this is, again, stereotyping. Do you think Kim Porter's a big gun aficionado? You think she could recognize the difference between a .22 and a .38 and a 9mm and all that stuff? Maybe. Maybe. I mean, that's possible. Not likely, but possible. Okay? So even if, the next question is, why would Diddy, this guy who's this terrible killer, all these things, why would he have a .22? I mean, you want to do some damage. You're not going to have a .22. I could be wrong, though. I'm not a huge gun nut either. Everything I know about guns is, you want to get the job done. You get like a 9mm, 38, 45, whatever. But okay. But it's just like the fact that she specifically knew it was a 20. Then he pulled out a 22. I just don't. It doesn't strike me as Kim Porter's writing. It strikes me as a dude. You know how many people I've had to take care of over the years? It would be quiet. Oh, they're talking about killing. If I was going to kill you, no one would trace it to me. You know how many people I've had to take care of over the years? It would be quiet. Something in your food or drink. Something that will never get back to me. I wouldn't shoot you. Do you understand? That's Diddy talking to Porter. So now she's got death threats, all right? Chapter 12, page 37. Talking about Big's mom. Miss Wallace, okay. Miss Wallace pushed further. I don't understand what's so difficult. He worked for you. He made his money. Where is it? Because Diddy didn't pay Big, apparently. That's basically what that passage is about. Which makes sense. There's a lot of people claiming Diddy screwed him on royalties of all kinds of types. Chapter 13, page 40. I gave her a hug. Talking about Faith Evans. I gave her a hug. Hey, girl, what's up? Sean smiled and asked, hey, what brings you out? She addressed Sean, saying, look, when you asked me to hook up with Chris, I understood. You needed to control him. I felt honor that you would choose me to monitor one of your most valuable assets. Chris is sweet. Sean laughed and said, honestly, I knew you would be good. Make the big man feel loved. So, wow, that's pretty rude. The author here is claiming that Faith Evans, who was Notorious Big's wife, was only there to control him and didn't really love him. That Diddy forced her to marry him to control him. Which comes up in the Art of Dialogue interview as well. Well, let's keep moving. Chapter 14, page 43. it just talks about the shooting with J-Lo. Okay, okay. Sean's arrogance can be immeasurable at times. He laughed as he asked, "You doubting me?" I couldn't believe it. I had to know. Sean, what could you offer him that would make him do a bid for you? Like, what the F? Jennifer, this is right after the shooting. She claims, let me go back here. Let me read you more, okay? Chapter 14. This particular evening, I was at Sean's house and Quincy was staying with a friend. I was alone. Doorbell rang. Sean got up to answer it. I heard a woman yelling and quickly realized it was Jennifer Lopez. Sean, what the F? Sean was like, relax, baby. Why the hell did you have to start shooting? Isn't that what we have bodyguards for? Meaning that J-Lo was like, she goes to the house and is like, what the hell? Why'd you start shooting? And so I entered the foyer asking, what's going on? Jennifer Lopez exploded at me. What's going on? What's going on? This N-word shot up a damn club. My jaw dropped, looking back and forth between the two. Sean spoke soothingly. Jen, you got to calm down. Jennifer was having none of it. She continued, calm down. Calm down. You shot a bunch of innocent people, Sean. Blah, blah, blah. Why in the hell did you think Biggie's replacement would take the fall for you? Biggie's replacement? Wait, could she be talking about... I had to know. Are you talking about Shine? Jennifer didn't even look at me as she responded, yes, Shine. Sean continued with a calm and even voice. Relax, the situation's under control. Jennifer was not calming down. She went on, they contacted my attorney for my statement, and there are a lot of witnesses, Sean. There's no way you're going to get away with this. Sean's arrogance can be immeasurable at times. He laughed as he asked, you doubting me? I couldn't believe it. I had to know. Sean, what could you offer him that would make him do a bid for you? Like, what the F? Jennifer also remarked, and what if he falters halfway through his sentencing and starts talking? All right, so the timeline makes no sense because the club shooting literally must have just happened because J-Lo shows up all pissed off. Why'd you go shooting? Why'd you shoot up the club? Even though she was with him, and I think she was even in the getaway car, but whatever. And she immediately, and Kim Porter immediately knows, because when she says, what could you offer Shine? Because Shine took the fall. Okay, let me back up. If you don't know the story, J-Lo, Diddy, who were dating, and Shine, a rapper on Bad Boy, went to the club, a fight ensues, shootings happen, people get shot, everyone escapes. And allegedly, and Shine took the fall for Diddy, saying that he's the one that pulled the trigger, okay? Lots of people say, hey, that didn't really happen like that. He took the fall for Diddy, whatever. And he gets sentenced to 10 years, which they call a bid in, street terminology. They call it a bid, doing a bid, 10 years. How would Kim Porter know Shine's going to do 10 years the night or the next morning at best of this shooting? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. All right. Then the chapter ends. We left the foyer and went to have a seat in the living room. He tried to make a threesome happen that night. It didn't work out. Not that day. So boom, another threesome. J-Lo. Get out of here, bro. We talk about that in the interview thing, okay? Oh, man. Okay, we're getting close to the end. Thank God. Page 50. It's called Chapter 16. Then we got to do this. But Sean, I don't believe in all this spiritual crazy shit. We got here because you're brilliant, not because of the sex parties. Why did I underline that passage? I didn't put a note. I don't know. I don't know why I underlined that. Maybe the spiritual angle? Voodoo? I'm not sure. He ordered me some food, and that night I cried myself to sleep. I was going to be gangbanged at 9 months pregnant. I want my children out of this life. My child's going to have a good biblical name, a heavy Christian name. They are not going to take his soul. And sure enough, their child would go on to be named Christian Combs. Then chapter 17, Broken Promises. They're talking about raising Quincy or whatever. Sean spent the next 6 months helping me heal and working his way back into my life and into my bed. I was so damn stupid, and of course, I wasn't cast for either movie. I guess she was promised to get into a movie. From what I understand, the producer... Oh, yeah, because he gets mad at her for trying to, like, be in some movie, I guess. And then it says, from what I understood, the producer died of pneumonia. That's how the chapter ends ominously, right? Because, what do I have in my notes here? The producer was... Oh, because the producer of the film was having coffee with Kim Porter, and Diddy got jealous. So the implication here that from Kim's words was that Diddy killed this man because he was so jealous. Died of pneumonia. And earlier we talked about how Diddy said he would kill people through their food. Okay, we're getting close to the end. Are you excited? Chapter 18, Sweet Goodbyes. Page 54. Sean kept his word for the most part until he didn't. I ended up pregnant again. He wanted energy from that, too. That would be my last sex party. My body will never be ravaged by so many people again, especially while I'm pregnant. What if something happened to the twins? After that, I wanted out. But when I tried dating someone else, they would end up dead from pneumonia. I knew Sean was behind it. This was not a coincidence. He gets jealous of a guy and then he died of pneumonia. I could be next. If I'm going to get out of this alive, I'm going to have to do something to make him stay away from me. Sean has a vault where he keeps videotapes of all his conquests. I started sleeping with him again. After he falls asleep, I would get into the vault, get a couple tapes, take them home, make copies, swap them for the next set of tapes a few days later, and so on. And this is why the author claims he's got a flash drive with, I guess, videos on it. Some of the tapes had things I would never have expected. The gay parties are one thing, but the young boys like Usher, Lil Bow Wow, and Justin Bieber... I would have never known. My God, is he grooming Quincy? This has to end. And again, all these things are possible. Do we believe that this author got these words from Kim Porter on a flash drive before she died? I don't. You can. I don't care. Like, don't bother me. No, I won't. Look, I won't judge you. I won't judge you. I'm just telling you, I'm not going along for that ride. This is like QA nonsense. Like, you know what I mean? And as I get older and as I get more mature and as I learn more about my beautiful conspiracy world, I find myself being more critical and, you know, I gotta shoot my shot, right? I'm telling you, I don't believe it. I'm not saying I don't believe that the things couldn't have happened in this book. I'm saying I don't believe that Kim Porter wrote this down, put it on a flash drive, had her people 5 years after her death give it to this Yahoo, who has virtually no background in investigative journalism, and not the New York Times or the police or the FBI. I mean, it's incredulous. Okay. He looked over confused. Where's all this coming from? I said, I got the footage, Sean. He looked even more confused. He said, what are you talking about? Kimura said with revulsion, Usher too? So Sean Diddy is like, oh man, they got the tapes. Then we get the last bit, chapter 19, the finale. Things were okay for a while. I started dating again. It was almost normal until I got serious with someone. Then my boyfriend died of pneumonia. I knew it was Sean. That's when I decided to write this book. A few days ago, my home was burglarized. Only laptops were stolen. Yada, yada, yada. I'll send this into a cloud. I'll send this. She's saying she's putting her notes out on Google Drives and all this stuff. This book must get out. There's so many more chapters to add. The outline is a great start. I plan on spending today working on exactly that, but I'm not feeling very well. Thank God the kids aren't here this weekend so I can rest. I called Kimura to cancel our plans for a meetup. When I spoke to her, she said, girl, that doesn't sound like the flu. You want to go to the hospital? That didn't immediately alarm me. I just need some rest, I told her, and got off the phone. Okay. This is what bugs me. That Art of Dialogue, 2.5-hour video, questioning this guy, and did the interviewer read the book? There's so much BS in here. She goes on, and it's 59 pages, the whole book. And at least 4 or 5 times says Diddy Combs kills people by giving him pneumonia. And she basically has pneumonia, and her friend's like, hey, you want to go to the hospital? And she's like, no, I'm good. Let me just get some sleep. I mean, it's unbelievably stupid. Unbelievably stupid. This is the stuff that I'm like, there's no way I'm believing this. There's no way. this is, and it's disgusting. If you know, if I'm correct, it's disgusting that this guy would make this book with these lies in it, claiming a dead woman wrote this stuff. I mean, there's just a cold place in hell for these kinds of people. This is when they say the money is the root of all evil. This is what they're talking about. This is what the Bible's talking about. Willing to overtly lie. And the world is so full of liars and grifters. Like, I'm so sick of it. That's why I say stuff the way I do. I'm like, people get paid $500,000 by Russians to push Russian propaganda. Like, get the hell out of here with that, man. I don't trust anyone. I'm becoming jaded. And it's because they've infiltrated my conspiracy world because they were like, oh, we can make money off of this. And I'm like, bro, I'm trying to like sift through the nonsense and find the truth. And you're just clouding it up worse than anyone else. You know? Let me finish this dumb book. So you're saying everyone leaves because of how I am and you were going to expose me? He had me burglarized. I knew it. I shouldn't have threatened him. I should have just published the book. I'm going to die like Heavy D, like Biggie, like Pac, like so many others, and it's because he's a monster. Before hanging up, I said, that's not the only copy, you F. Then I shoot out a group text. I let everyone know, he got me. Then I call 911. As I sit here waiting for the ambulance, I'm writing this chapter and praying that I make it to the hospital. I don't feel like writing anymore. I may not be around to see it in print. It's okay. I'm sending it out. He won't get away with this. I will have my final say, my final words. Sean Combs will get exposed, even if I lose my life doing it. My kids have always been my most cherished possessions. I want the world to know that. But more importantly, I want them to know... ... Okay, that's the book. Now let's move over to another horrific thing. An interview, if you go to the Art of Dialogue channel on YouTube, I don't know who this interviewer is. I've never heard of the channel. So I'm not talking trash about them. I don't know enough about them to have an opinion. All I know is that this interview in particular was terrible. This was trash. This was a waste of 2 hours and 17 minutes of my life I can never get back. I don't even recommend you watch it. It's absolutely terrible. I'm going to rush through this thing in 10 minutes and give you more than what you wanted to hear. It starts out introducing this guy. And this is where I learned that the dude's name wasn't Jamal Millwood. I'm like, oh, this is a white dude named John or Chris Todd. And he talks about how he got this flash drive came from these music industry insiders. And they're like, this was Kim Porter's. We need you, this guy who's never done anything. Doesn't work for any major media outlet. We need you to publish the memoir. Okay, got it. So Chris Todd, the name reminds me of John Todd. Remember that guy that was the Satanic Panic grifter guy? And I don't know if there was a podcast I was listening to about John Todd. Interesting dude. I don't know if he's legit or not, though. But anyway, so if you watch the video, this Chris Todd, he looks and acts a lot like that dude from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, the guy who's scalping the tickets all the time, like total like sleazeball, you know what I mean? And immediately they talk about this Jamal T. Millwood alias, and the T is a reference, means Tupac. All right, he says, I use T for Tupac to differentiate it from any other Jamal Millwoods out there. The host, his name is Del Rey, is the host. He's like, and I'm assuming Del Rey is a black man, because he's like, hey, the name Jamal implies this is a black man. Like this, I guess, implying that it gives it more credence, and Chris being a white man, you know. So Del Rey's like, hey, don't you think that's sus? You're using a black man's alias. And Chris is like, hey, white people have names like, you know, Todd. And Del Rey's like, bro, there's no white Jamals in existence. What are you talking about? Now, this whole Jamal Millwood thing is interesting because everyone claims that Jamal Millwood is an alias for Tupac because there's theories that Tupac's still alive. I hadn't heard this one before, though. So I looked it up. And on Reddit, there was a post, and this gets kind of complicated, so I'll try to be clear. On Reddit, someone claimed that Mutulu Shakur, that's Tupac's stepfather, he died last year. He did a robbery in the 60s. He was very in the Black Liberation Army and very political and, you know, Black Panthers-esque. And he did a robbery that ended up killing two cops and got 60 years in prison. He got paroled after 37 years, but died 8 months later. Ain't that a bitch? Anyhow, someone on Reddit posts screenshots of Mutulu Shakur's Instagram, allegedly him making comments about how this memoir of Kim Porter stole the information from him somehow. I don't understand it, and I couldn't confirm this post at all. I tried to look on Mutulu's Instagram, and I couldn't find this to be true. Like I said, it's hard to tell what's real anymore. But I did find that Mutulu Shakur did write a book called Into the Gutter, and I couldn't find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I could only find a pre-order page from a company called Alter the Ego, which is a curious name, right? And it has a soundtrack for the book that was published in 2017, and it's six tracks, and the voice sounds exactly like Tupac. Again, this could be a massive rabbit hole right here alone. And one of the Redditors said that, you know, the case of Jonathan Oddie, he was a guy in 2018, went into Trump Tower with a gun and got arrested. He was telling cops after he got arrested that he was forced to do these sex parties with Cassie and Diddy. But this was years before that was common sort of knowledge, right? So it brings some credence to Jonathan Oddie's story. Well, apparently he also told the cops that Tupac is alive and still in Cuba. And the claim is that he is alive under the name Jamal Millwood in Cuba. The original poster on this Reddit, ST7 Barrett, posted a link to a person they think is the publisher of this book by Mutulu Shakur called Into the Gutter. If you go to Instagram and look up Courtney, spelled Courtney, .bng, as in Bravo November Joker, you'll find this person. And it says they are the CEO of Alter the Ego Records. And they have a ton of followers, 148,000 followers. And as of this recording, October 3rd, the most recent photo was of Justin Bieber kissing an old white man. And he's endorsing this Kim Porter book. Massive rabbit hole, folks. You want to get deep into this, you could start going down that rabbit hole. I looked casually into it. I peered into it, and I was like, dude, what is going on here? Something's going on. And if you go to that Alter the Ego's webpage, if you just Google for that, for Into the Gutter, the book, this is what it says. It says, Into the Gutter is a stirring and poignant historic fiction novel based in the year 2004, 8 years after the death of Tupac Shakur. Or is he actually alive, living under the alias name Jamal Millwood? So, lots of questions. Did Chris Todd see this book or article and say, hey, I'm going to use that name too? Was this common knowledge? I had never heard this thing about Jamal Millwood before. Is Tupac alive and under an alias? Man, I don't know. But they argue about it on this interview. And then Del Rey talks about how Kim Porter's actual friend in real life, LaWanda Wayne, disputes the memoir, as do many people. And Chris Todd makes it sound like, well, maybe there's a reason she's doing that. All right. And Del Rey's like, look, LaWanda was like besties with Kim. She would have known if she was writing a tell-all memoir. And Chris Todd's like, he pleads the fifth the whole time. I don't know. No comment. And if you watch it, the whole time Chris Todd's super shifty, constantly fidgeting with his belt and his shoes. And I'm not a body language expert, but it seems like he's very uncomfortable, i.e. he's lying. And Chris Todd, he says that he's got a photo of Kim getting beat up that he gave to Radar Online, and he got that photo from the flash drive. I guess if that's true, that's pretty supportive, right? He says he sent photos of Snoop Dogg and Andrew Harrell and Neo to all these media outlets from the flash drive, but they won't release them. The book says that Del Rey asked him about how the claim that Diddy set up Faith to mess with Big, right? And they talk about the dates. Chris Todd has this elaborate explanation because Del Rey was pretty close to an insider, apparently. I don't know who he is. But everything that Del Rey points out, Chris Todd's like, just pleads the fifth and is like, well, I don't know. I didn't write this. Kim wrote it. Okay. You don't get any information out of it. Let me tell you that right off the bat. LaWanda, Kim Porter's bestie, said Kim couldn't even work a computer. And Chris Todd's like, well, that's insulting. And LaWanda's trying to undermine the book. I also think that's a little insulting. I mean, who doesn't know how to work a computer in 2018? But maybe. I'll be sure. They talk about him trying to shut the book down. Chris is like, bring it on. I've got this $40 million lawsuit he should look into. He talks like he's a lawyer, but he's an investigative journalist. I try to look online for more info on this $40 million lawsuit on Chris Todd. I can't find much. It's flimsy at best. I see some IMDb type postings. I can't confirm that it's the same guy. It says he was like a script writer and worked in Hollywood and all this stuff, which makes me think like, oh, so he's trying to become famous. And this is his last ditch effort is to just lie. You know what I mean? And I'm going to put some of these images of what I'm talking about on the Instagram at Isaac Weisop, like and subscribe, of the like the Alter the Ego page and this Courtney B and J screenshot. There's a couple like IMDb. You can look it up. Look up that full name of the Christopher Todd Goosey. Todd Christopher Goosey is his name. And you'll find some IMDb type postings. Like he did a couple small projects. I don't know. Del Rey asked about this I'll Be Sure threesome. And Chris was like, look, I X'd out the name. We can't confirm what's going on there.
Oh, boy.
Let's see. Del Rey said Kim's kids, Kim Porter's children, said their mom was not working on any kind of book. Chris Todd says, oh, a lot of people said she was. Okay. He repeats the same thing about Faith Evans monitoring Big, and Chris Todd's just like, who knows? Del Rey keeps pushing back. They go through a list of personal testimonies and magazines that prove that Faith and Big were actually in love and not set up by Diddy, but Chris Todd's like, I don't know. Del Rey asks if he reached out to Faith or any of these other people he's making claims about in the book, and he is never specific. He's like, well, we reached out. Our teams contacted their teams. Not all of them, but some of them. I can't disclose who. Seems sus. They talk about this Essence article with Kim Porter and Diddy's dating history starting in 1994 with a photo from December 31st when their relationship started. Chris Todd's book says that they were in an open relationship earlier that year when Kim Porter had sex with Tupac, supposedly. So the whole point of Del Rey saying, look, this Essence article proves that the dates aren't correct. Because Kim Porter told Essence that her and Diddy started their relationship that night, New Year's Eve 94. And Chris Todd's like, well, the flash drive says otherwise. Okay. He says, I don't care what Essence says, which means I don't care what Kim Porter said, the woman who lived this life. He thinks Kim was dating Tupac and Diddy in the summer of 94, not what Kim told Essence that it was New Year's Eve 94. I'm going to play a clip for you. It's about 6 minutes. This sums up the entire 2 hours of what you have to deal with to listen to this terrible interview of why hasn't he talked to any of these celebrities? And to be fair, Chris Todd's like, look, they wouldn't admit it anyway, which is true. I think that's a good valid point. But why not have any photos or any proof of anything of this whole video? Let's take a listen.
The book. I'm talking about the book. The book says that they had an open relationship, right?
the relationship had not began.
I'm saying that's false. So I don't care what the article says.
So you don't care what Kim says?
30 years ago? You're dating it as 1994?
No. I'm talking about this particular time.
When the article was written, 30 years ago, right?
No, I wouldn't say 30 years ago. I don't know the exact date, but this, you can go, it's an Essence article.
I believe, to be honest, I believe she met him in either, even before 94. I know.
Oh, they met before 94.
I know. In parts of the diary, there's segments of a diary. Mm-hmm. She's saying 94, mm-hmm. like the summer. I think she dates it as like June 15th.
Right.
I think they met before that. I don't know if she's saying that date particularly. That's 6 months before that date.
But
I know what you're saying. Right, right. I'm not going to address it again.
I've already said it. Right. The reason why I'm saying not what you think, right, but actually what's in the book.
And just because she said it 30 years ago and 20 years ago, I understand what you're saying. I've already made the comment. I don't believe... It's totally possible that she sleeps with Tupac Shakur in 1994. It doesn't mean she slept with him right before the shooting. I know what you're trying to do. I've said my thing.
Okay. No, I'm not trying to do anything. I'm just trying to actually sort out.
I just gave the answer.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. The alleged memoir makes controversial claims about Kim Porter's alleged sexual encounters with other high-profile figures. How did you substantiate these details?
Through sources that were very close to the real sources of the flash drive, told numerous stories over an 8-month period that this stuff was true. Did it, like I stated before, did I go call these celebrities personally? No. Okay. I had some people try to reach out to them. We never really spoke directly to the people. I don't need to. I'm not the cops. I'm not saying they're doing anything illegal. Okay. I am a conduit that they make a joke about me when I say that. I am doing this for Kim. Whatever she wrote, did I research every single little thing? Obviously, I did my investigation. Mm-hmm. I believed it was real, so I published it. That's it. As for every little thing, and you're doing a great job. I totally get what you're doing, and it's you can ask me anything you want.
The reason why I'm asking this, because these are serious...
What do you think Will Smith would say? Can I say something? What do you think Will Smith would say if I called him up on his cell phone? I pull his number through a PI, right? And I call him up and I go, when Kim was pregnant, she says she's on the phone with you. And that Sean's on the phone with you, Will. And that he's talking about this. Do you think he's going to admit that that really happened? Right now, with everything that's going on with Sean Combs and all these celebrities are silent right now. Do you really think he's going to talk to me? Do you think he's going to admit to that?
I don't have an answer for that.
Okay,
The reason why I'm saying this, because, like I said, this is something that is alleged that Kim said.
Sure.
And so when you ask me that question in regards to Will Smith, I'm saying to you...
That's the example, though.
I understand that. Yeah. But like I said, when we talk about the encounters involving Kim Porter's alleged encounters... with other high-profile figures, mm-hmm. I just gave you the example of Tupac in a situation involving that and how the timeline doesn't add up to what Kim said
in
the Essence article, as well as the picture that was dated from that actual party mm-hmm. when her and Sean Combs sure. actually first started to date.
Sure.
And so the alleged on and off relationship. So when I ask about the Kim Porter alleged sexual encounters, I'm asking you, how did you substantiate these? So there's no video?
A sex tape of Will Smith?
Of anything involving Kim Porter.
A video of her having sex?
No, let me repeat the question for you. The alleged memoir makes controversial claims about Kim Porter's alleged sexual encounters with other high profile figures. Mm-hmm. How did you substantiate these details?
There's no videos of her. There's right. videos of Sean Combs with people.
Okay.
Not Kim with people.
Okay.
So the answer is no. There's no photos of anything like that. Even the photos that were first given to me with the book, there are no photos of celebrities in their underwear. There's none of that. Okay. There's another part of the flash drive. It's hard to say this. I don't have all of that right now. There's multiple. We'll just say that. So I've not been allowed to see every single thing. Okay. And then as for trying to, I'm not going to call up famous people and ask them if they had sex with Kim and Diddy. I'm not going to do it.
Well, but that's what the book alleges.
Correct.
And so, and the reason why I'm asking that, because like I said, this is the art of dialogue. Yes. And we want to sit down and have a real true dialogue. This is not about, you know, the promotion of the book or the lack thereof. And I think more people are informed about what it actually is and isn't.
Sure.
And so basically the answer is you don't have any.
I have what Kim said.
Right. You have what.
So if you came to me, let me answer.
Okay.
If you came to me and you wanted to tell me your life story.
Right.
I'm going to believe you. I'm going to investigate it behind you a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if I believe what you're saying is true, I'm not going to call you a liar and I'm going to publish it.
Right. But once again, we have not seen the hard drive.
Correct.
We have not seen that it, if it actually comes from Kim. We don't know that.
Sure.
As the public, the people who are watching this, correct, they don't know that. And so the reason why the question is being asked basically is, so it's alleged that that was it, but you don't have any proof, concrete, video or otherwise.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. There are allegations of Diddy's involvement in alleged sexual activity with celebrities, including Jay-Z, Will Smith.
Well, I will say this. Can I? Sorry to interrupt. Can I say something?
Yeah, I'll ask. Okay.
If there's any litigation, I will prove that it's her flash drive. Yes.
Okay. So you can.
I will prove. Like what you just said, that there's no proof of that. I will prove it, but not yet because I haven't released the flash drive. Okay, when that time comes, I will prove it's her flash drive and she said that. Okay. Whether the people, you see, when people talk about proof and evidence, that's why we can get into that maybe after. But my point is, if you go to a court or the police or an investigation and Jada and Will say, we never slept with Kim, how do we know they're telling the truth? So just because they say no doesn't mean it's not true. That's my
point. And just because someone tells you yes doesn't mean it's true either.
Absolutely.
So that works both ways.
Correct.
It doesn't work favorably to what we want to believe because the argument is something that we want to believe because this is what the narrative that we want to
push.
Good
point. Good point.
And so
he say, she say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
And in court, it's called hearsay. You know, so when you that's a very slippery slope when you're dealing with stuff like that. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah,
that you will be able to prove. Mm-hmm. If pressed, that this alleged hard drive came that belongs to Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Will you also reveal your sources?
No.
Okay.
And that's the struggle of this whole 2-hour, 17-minute thing. He drops no comments on everything. Jay-Z, Jamie Foxx, no comment. Asked about Kim Porter claiming she has the Diddy tapes. He doesn't no comment. Let's just say the tapes exist. Okay. Delray asks him about the Quincy Porter being groomed by Diddy passage, and he's like, oh, that was so dark. I just had to let it go in one ear, not the other. Okay. Back again to the pseudonym. It talks about how everyone knows who he is. Chris Todd is like, look, everyone knows who I am and all my investigative journalism. I've got a huge case going on. Everyone knows about. And this is why Delray, I didn't like his interview. Why not stop and say, okay, Chris Todd, what are the big cases you're investigating? What's the big one everyone knows about? What are your big wins? He doesn't ask him about his credentials for this. So I'm like, when I Google, I can't find anything. So I'm like, well, is this for real? So, terrible job all around here. They go back to Albie Shore again. I mean, he keeps repeating the same things. Back to Diddy putting tension between Tupac and Big. And Delroy makes a good point about how there's no way that could be possible because Big was already starting a label called Undeceased Recordings with Lance Rivera. Back in 94, so that doesn't even make sense that Big and Tupac were threatening to start a label together. If you don't know Lance Rivera, I talked about this in Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic. Lance Rivera was the guy that was alleged to have been stabbed by Jay-Z in 1999. Jay-Z gets found guilty, does 3 years probation. No real prison time, which sounds a lot like Diddy, right? Diddy's doing all these horrific things and he doesn't get any prison time. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Then I found out, looking around on this, last year on DJ Vlad, Rivera claims that Jay-Z is such a great guy, and Jay-Z never stabbed him. which tells me that then why would Jay-Z take the fall for that? Is it just to get street cred? Weird stuff. He said, Chris Todd says the book was actually less than 59 pages. With the formatting, it made it longer. They discussed Jamal Millwood again. They talk about finances and about from the sales of the book. Chris Todd won't comment on who gets what, but that it earned $1 million in 4 days. And that's what I'm saying. That's why grifters be grifting. $1 million? Would you take $1 million to lie? You know what I mean? And that's a lot of money. It's a lot of, this is life-changing amount of money. All you got to do is lie once. It's got to be tempting. It's got to be. Yeah, but he says, he's like, look, I got a lot more to release. And this is where I confirm that I don't believe him. Because then he starts talking about how he wants to make this a movie. And I was like, because I'd already looked him up. I think he's got an IMDb about him writing scripts and stuff. And I was like, well, there you go. He wants to sell a script. Cash in on the book, sell a script. And then Del Rey, he reads an interview. He basically says, look, J-Lo and Kim Porter hated each other. He proves it with an interview with Kim Porter saying like how awful J-Lo was or whatever. And Chris is like, no, not true. There's photos of them. And Del Rey's like, where's the photos? He's like, they're on the internet. And they look it up in real time on the show. They can't find any. I also couldn't find any. And then the interview ends. And Chris Todd's like, yeah, someday let's talk about O.J. Simpson. And I'm going to come back to that in about a minute. To wrap up this whole show. In conclusion, the interview, trash. It's frustrating. He doesn't answer anything, doesn't clarify anything, doesn't prove anything, just keeps saying the claim over and over. Even Del Rey, the interview, keeps asking the same questions over and over. It's like, bro, I mean, I swear this was 2.5 hours of 3 questions. I swear. It was atrocious. But the author, Chris Todd, this dude's sus. He seems to be on the IMDb and such, on these websites, trying to be some Hollywood guy. His Instagram is private. I found his Instagram Threads account. And if you go to his, he had one post about OJ. Then in his replies, you can see him replying to a bunch of other people's thread posts. And he links to this OJ video over and over. This OJ video that's on this Factsverse account on YouTube. I still don't understand the OJ thing. I don't know how he's connected to OJ. Is this the big case that he's talking about? What did he do? Who knows? He acts like he has this long history of investigative journalism. I can't find a thing about the guy. I'm not saying that he doesn't. I'm saying that I couldn't find anything about it. Why would Kim Porter give this guy this flash drive? It makes no sense to me. His mannerisms make him look sus. He doesn't prove anything. He just says no comment on everything. Has no evidence of anything that we can look at. His background is sus. The writing of the book is sus. In the interview, he uses the term, he says, Kim could have been unalived, which I hate that. I hate this. Can we not talk like idiots? I realize that everyone gets censored everywhere. And maybe I should take notes. You know, I'd stop getting banned off of YouTube. Like, why can't I use the word killed? Why? And I get it. I mean, that is how it works. So I guess I don't like that. But look, to sum it up, I could be entirely wrong. It's very possible. I don't think I am. This is my judgment. This is my opinion. I give it a less than 1% chance that this book is real. I would put cash money. If there was a way to bet on this, I would put cash money down that this Chris Todd guy has no actual real proof that he got this from Kim Porter. He might show me a flash drive and a photo. I'm telling you, if you can prove it in a court of law, this came from Kim Porter, then I'll reconsider my view. The dates are interesting, though. I'll give it that. Publishing this book September 5th or 6th, just a couple weeks before Diddy actually gets arrested. That is interesting. Pretty interesting. So I'll leave room for this to be proven true, like I said, but to me, it's not enough evidence. I put it right up there with Stu Peters. Remember, he was grifting, telling him he started out as a rapper that couldn't make it. Then he was a conspiracy guy and telling you that COVID's in the water. Don't touch water. You're going to get COVID. I don't know if you remember that. Now he's a big shot. He's a huge name now. Same with Russell Brand. He was ultra anarchist, liberal. Didn't really make that work. Then he was guru. Couldn't really make a ton of money off that. Then he was like, let's talk about conspiracies. And boom, blew up. Now he found Jesus. 7 million followers on his YouTube. Talks about the same stuff I talk about. I get kicked off of there. What is going on in this world? And look, maybe I'm being defensive, crying, because it's exhausting. Getting torched to the ground and having to rebuild constantly. You're just like, why bother? And I think that's what they want. They want guys who show up with rational arguments. They want to shut it down. They want me to be this hyperbolic, insane, pounding on the desk guy. And I'm not going to do it. So there you go. The Kim Porter book. Very fascinating. I'm glad I bought it, though. This is a piece of history here. I wrote it all in the margins, so I can't even sell it. But interesting book. It's complete BS, I think. But now you know. So there you go. Hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for being a supporter. You're keeping the show alive. I say that, I mean that. Supporters are the only reason I'm doing this show. So thank you very much. This is for you. Thank you for listening to the show. Till next time, stay positive.